everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Phoenix Files episode. I sat down with creator Stefan Frank at the show to talk about his title from Dark Planet Comics, Silver. It's a title I've talked about several times on the show. Stefan's been on the show several times. In fact, I think the first time I had him on, I think it might have been when we still were just doing YouTube exclusively. And I know there's a YouTube episode out there that's a spotlight on Silver. So for those not aware, Silver is the story of a group of con men who are trying to steal a bunch of silver from vampires. And not any vampires, Dracula himself. It's kind of a continuation of the Bram Stoker classic Dracula story. So Stefan's a great guy. He got his start in animation, working on such films as Iron Giant, I guess would probably be the most famous property he worked on. So he's really great, and Silver has a pretty dedicated fan base at this point. And the reason Stefan and I sat down and talked at the show was just recently, earlier this week, I think on Tuesday, the day after Memorial Day, they launched a new Kickstarter for Volume 4, which is going to wrap up the Silver story. So I'll put a link in the show notes to the Kickstarter. And I encourage you all to listen to the interview and then go and back the Kickstarter if you'd like. Stefan does a lot of shows. So if you haven't had a chance to pick up Silver, you can definitely look for him at a show near you. Or the trade paperbacks of Volumes 1, 2, and I believe 3 is available now through Diamond. So what that means is you can ask your local comic shop to order it for you, and Diamond should be able to ship it directly there. So it's also available on Comixology if you want to go digital, or you can order directly from Dark Planet Comics. So I hope you all enjoy the interview, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, this is Jace from the Comic Source. I'm here with Stefan Frank. Early in the morning, Friday, Phoenix Comic Fest, as it's now known. Haven't had my coffee. It's supposed to be breakfast out here in the green room, but it's MIA, so apologies if we're a little not as sharp as we would be with full bellies and coffee in our system.
Right.
But thanks for joining me, Stefan.
It's my pleasure. It's great to see you.
Yeah, it's always great to see you. So remind our listeners about your creator-owned project, Silver. What's it all about?
So Silver is a four-volume series of graphic novels, and it's a continuation of the original Bram Stoker's Dracula universe, and it takes place 40 years later into the noir pulp era of the 1930s, and you have this group of con men who team up with this woman who's a vampire hunter to steal precious silver from a castle full of vampires.
Now, I love that premise, right? I mean, it makes sense that if you're a vampire and you're vulnerable to silver, you would try to hoard all the silver, so keep it out of the hands of everybody else. Right?
Yeah, actually, in the that would be the logical and you know, reason. I have to say though, in the book, that you really were exploring a more existential reason why the vampires hoard the silver, and it's the way I'm treating the vampires in this story is that they're not glamorous. I mean, they have the verniz of glamour, but really they're just corpses. You know, they're the dead kind of masquerading as the living, and just like everybody else, they're just trying to feel alive, right? And so so first they have no sense of any of the deeper emotions like love or, you know, friendship. It's all about greed and lust, right? And so the greed is sort of like fetishized over this obsession with silver, which is, yes, the thing that burns them and then eventually could kill them. And again, that's like in their quest of trying to feel alive, you know, that's why people skydive or why do people
smoke.
It's just like, yeah, you know, feeling with mortality, kind of to test the limits of feeling alive, you know.
Now, in issue 3, or volume 3, rather, things start to go maybe not quite the way they should, right? It reminded me of issue 1, in that Finnegan's got this great plan for a con,
yes,
but with a con, it never quite goes the way you like. So that's a way to introduce more drama and conflict, or is that just like the way the story goes for you? Like, what was your thought toward things kind of getting out of Finnegan's control?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, you know, it's when I work on a story, I try to not intervene and kind of overplot, like in a way that feels constructed and directed, you know, and it feels external to the story. I feel more like I'm winding up these toys and I put them at the start line and I just let them go, you know, and you know that they're going to bump into each other, you know, crazy shit is going to happen, you know, and so it's just like trying to create those characters and situations that have convergences of interest at the beginning of the story, but there are brokenness inside of them that you know they're gonna go off script at some point and fall off the rails and stuff like that. So that's what's really cool with this, right? So you have this team of broken characters who are all extremely good at what they do, but all in their own way, they suck at life. So, you know, Finn, right, is, you know, he's a con man. So, yeah, he's this kind of master burglar, etc. But at the same time, you know, in the first volume, when we first meet him, he steals a children's charity. He robs a children's charity. So, you know, he's obviously a broken guy, you know. Sledge, you know, she's on this would-be noble quest, you know, to kill vampires, but really she's been spending way too much of her life dealing with the dead, and she's lost her ability to handle the living a little bit too much. So, like, and even Dracula, when we meet him, also still has not recovered from the loss of Mina, but also more than just, it's not just his heart broke, it's also that she let some sunshine in, like, pun intended.
Right.
And that, and now he doesn't know what to do with himself, you know, because just he knows, like, you know, how to say, you know, a little knowledge is gets you in trouble, right. You know? So a little bit of humanity gets him in real trouble,
right?
Where he doesn't know where he fits anymore, right? So you have all these broken characters, and they all try to do this thing, and it's very, they think it through and stuff like that, but the brokenness always reasserts itself, and everything goes off the rails, right? So, and I think these are all characters, and somebody was asking me, you know, it's a very noir sort of story format, right? Where noir to me is about redemption.
Right.
You always find characters that are at the last fork in the road, right? And it's either there's damnation on one side, redemption on the other, right? And, you know, which one are they going to take? They're all at their last final choice, right? And so it's, you know, but of course, you know, the right road is the hardest one to take.
Right.
There's a price to pay for it. So not everybody's able or willing to pay that price. So it's really about seeing who of this cast of characters is going to be able to find redemption and reconnect with life at the end of the story versus just go down, you know, in flames. You know?
Yeah, and it's a credit to you and your storytelling ability that we root for these characters because we do see they come to the crossroads and you want them to do the right thing and you're like, come on, you're pulling for them, right?
Yes.
Now you have to feel, as the creator of these and having wound them up and, you know, you have the big story ideas, the big beats, but you're going to see how they get there.
Yeah.
You have to feel like a father in a way. You're probably pulling for them to do the right thing more than any of us, right?
Yeah.
And maybe people that don't understand the way you tell stories, the character ultimately tells you where they're going to go.
That's exactly right.
It's not the other
exactly
way around.
Right.
You
exactly
can't force
right.
them to make
nope.
the right choice,
no.
right?
No. It tells you what he wants to be, you know? And, you know, people who don't write or, you know, it feels like that's like a, well, that's a very fanciful thing to say.
No, right.
But it really is true. And I think what it is, it's not like any mysterious supernatural process. It's just that when you're writing or, you know, creating a story or, and by the way, I consider like that I'm storytelling and authoring as much when I write than when I draw.
Mm-hmm.
Both, you know, I discover stuff in the performance. That's the thing a lot of people don't necessarily realize. You know, when a lot of people come to the booth and ask me this funny question, I'm digressing, but I'll get there.
No, no.
And they always say, are you the author or the artist? You know? And it's really, to be frank, of course, you know, what they mean is the writer or the artist, but, you know, it really betrays this kind of dualistic vision where you have a high form and a low form. You have the one connected with the truth of story, and you have the pencil monkey. You know? And so, but of course, it's not true. And the thing that you, when you do this, you know that all those stories live and die in execution, in performance, right? So when I'm drawing the drawings, I feel like I'm performing the story, and very often there's a truth that I found in there that kind of alters slightly what was written, because the closer you get to the performance, the closer you get to the truth of the moment, and it's easier to be true to the characters. So going back to what we were saying before, I think it's really what you want to do is get yourself, your conscious self, out of the way, and you create those characters, and you sort of, it's like playing, you know. To me, the way I it's like when you're driving, you know, and you're driving from somewhere, and at some point you can lose track. And you're like, oh, I passed Glendale already? Oh, did that happen? I don't recall getting in front of you. You know what I'm talking about? You're just like, how did I get from here to there? Autopilot takes in, right? And I think that's when you're doing it at in your best moments, autopilot of your creative and conscious, and that's why you are all the characters, right? Like Flaubert, you know, the French writer, pretty much invented the form of the novel. You're one of those people. Said, "I am my characters, all of them," right? You wind up those toys and those triggers and those things, that you just let them go, and you know, best work days you don't remember. You wake up and like, oh, did I just drive past this? Oh, you know what I mean?
Now, you've been telling stories for a long time, so let me ask you this. Yeah. Do you still find sometimes that you'll write something, or you'll have a character do a certain something, and then when you go back to either kind of reread it or proofread it, or even by the time you get to where you're illustrating it, do you ever find that, oh, that is out of character, I need to change that? That's not, even now. Like,
constantly. You know, like even if you're looking on the film side, right? No movie ever, you know, has like a script and they go, let's shoot exactly that.
Right.
No, because the minute, the question is always, because every art form, every craft has some sort of assembly line, like a process of different ways to go about it, something like that. And the question is, when does the art form peak in the process, right? Like there's sometimes the the art form peaks early in the process, and then the processes to get it to like a final, you know, things that people see can only, it's only downhill from there, you know. And so hopefully you're trying to always think of your storytelling process, even if it's a film and stuff like that. Like, for instance, you wouldn't want like a work of genius, the written, like every crafted word is perfect and stuff like that, and then it's horribly performed. You know, no, you want to keep building, because the thing is that it never stays the same, right? You can't. The scene will never be as good as every step, right? Like, for instance, some scenes are, you know, so like, I'm sorry, it's morning, so my mind is digressing, but it's like, for instance, I'll tell you, you know, when you're doing a film, it's really interesting because, especially in animation, right? I mean, it's, you do it in live action too, but animation, we really do story reels where we really workshop the scene and stuff like that, right? And sometimes, like, I've done something where you write the scene, and like that scene is hysterical on the page, and then that scares me because then I know, oof, how are we gonna live up to that, right?
Right.
but sometimes this, the scene makes sense on the page, but it's not killing me yet, right? And so sometimes I know when the scene's gonna, which department the scene's gonna really come alive. So, and sometimes I don't know, right? And it's really, so like, in other words, for instance, the, sometimes the scene is okay, you know, in animation, but then you see it in story, that's when now it's, you know, like, right. Sometimes story just like, yeah,
it needs the context,
but I know that, oh, when the actor performs it, it's great, and sometimes that's it, and then the scene's like reached its peak, and sometimes it's like no, that's good, but really when the animator just takes a hold of, you know, and sometimes and it's not the fault of, I mean, and it's not a bad thing. It's just like some scenes peak late, right? Like, for instance, some scenes will only work once you mix, right? When you either add that sound effects or just put it up, you know, in front, so that, and that makes the scene, right? And so that tends to make your, you know, producers nervous, because they're like, the scene's still not working. And I'm like, trust me, it'll work in color timing. You know what I mean? They're like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? But it's true, right? So, in other words, every step, whether it's the film process, the animation process, whether it's the comic book process, where, again, there's an ideation, then there's the writing of the scene, then you break it down, then you ink it, then you add the dialogue, then you add the sound effect, like the visual sound effects, you know, like the boom, bang, bing, whatever, right? And some scenes peak at the end. Some scenes only work once you add that sound effect. You know what I mean? Some scenes work right from the page. But every new step that you take, the scene goes up a notch, hopefully, and you discover new things and new truth about it, right? Not just on its the aesthetic of the presentation of it, but just really the scene makes its point sometimes late in the game, and you realize that it's not that what you had before was false, but it's just that it's an iterative process, right, that builds upon itself. And sometimes it takes some steps to get there. Well, that was talking about steps getting there. I mean, that was a long ass answer.
But you're right, though. I mean, it needs to be additive. So at that point, when you go from, you know, step C to step D, you can see, oh, that's where it stops. If D's not better than C, okay, something needs to change. It's got to keep building. So that makes a lot of sense.
And sometimes it can't, right? Sometimes the scene was, you know, what makes it great was early in the process, and then you just have to try to
maintain
as much as you can, because like I said, once you've seen the truth, you can't see it again, you've just already seen it,
right.
You know what I mean? So it's like you can't step in the same river twice. It's like the moment is the moment, you know,
right.
So either try to hold on to it and retain what you can, or reach it when you can, you know.
All right, so we have volume 4 of Silver coming out soon, so before we start talking specifically about volume 4, I just want to mention something. So every time I see you at a show and we're talking at the booth, invariably I see people come up that are previous readers. They're like, okay, I'm ready for the next voice. So it seems like it's got a big fan base, and the reception continues to be positive. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, this has been like the most rewarding thing in the world, because, you know, when you're doing this, it's a very solitary process, unlike film or animation, you know? And so sometimes you feel, I always say, like, I feel like I'm in my studio alone, and I feel like Jack Nicholson in The Shining in his basement, you know? Like, and that somebody's going to come in and it's going to be like, you know, shapes, you know? Like, what? Right? I cannot not brag about it. I just have to say what it is, which is that the connection that the people have had with the material has been really incredible. Like, for instance, you know, people come in and say, oh, I've been waiting, you know, you were the first person on my list to see this year, or like even, the first issue, like the first chapter was issued as a single issue for Free Comic Book Day, you know, and so tons of them went out, right? And so now I'm really seeing the, you know, people. They, for instance, for Free Comic Book Day, I did signings on the Saturday, and then I would do other signings. I would return like the following weekend, and people were like, "I got the first issue. I want all the volumes." You know what I mean? And there was here's the thing, you know, like, as you said, I worked on a lot of different projects, and it's like almost a field of dream situation, mm-hmm. where sometimes you build it and no one comes, you know, right. what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with the project. It's just like, it's just not the right time, not the right, the execution didn't work out, whatever. I mean, it's, and you look at it and it's a perfectly fine thing, right? But, but just the connection just doesn't, and even some movies that, not gonna name, but that I worked on that made, like, for the movie that I worked on that made the most money made billions of dollars, you know. No one comes to me and say, "You work on this, that's my favorite movie." Well, you know, there's other movies, you know, I'm sick of naming some yet, but they, you know, are much smaller movies, and people, you know, fell in love with it, and it became like a part of their life, you know. And so Silver is one of the things that I've built, and they've come, you know, that there's, I can't explain it, why more, when, why this one than the other one, I don't know. It's that's part of the mystery and the beauty of it, you know. But either it resonates with people, rings true, and they just take it and becomes theirs, or it's just another thing, you know.
Well, I love the story, so I'm glad that I'm not the only one, and that we're gonna continue.
Yes,
so, what I know that you recently announced. This is time travel in a way, listener. So remember, we're recording this at Phoenix Comic Con, the weekend before Memorial Day, but this will be released on the Friday after Memorial Day. So as you listen to this, listeners, the Kickstarter for Volume 4 will already have been announced. So let's peek into the future, Stefan. What can you tell us about the Kickstarter for Volume 4?
Well, let me tell you about Volume 4. You know, talking about peaking at the end, I'm really excited because with every volume, I was like, ooh, this one's working. I'm really afraid the next one's not going to work. And turns out every volume kind of really worked out. But 4, I really feel like the series ends at the strongest that it's been. So I'm really, really excited about it. And also, you know, it's funny because talking about steps in the process that, you know, which ones are challenging. Writing is, of course, a challenging step because, you know, it's writing. So you have a blank page in its purest form. So, but drawing the final pages is challenging because of the drawing challenges. Like, there's horses, there's trains, the breaking down the breakdowns, you know, basically the visual storytelling of it, which is so close to storyboarding, which I've done miles and miles of storyboarding, yeah. you know, in my career. So that's always been the part that was the easiest for me, and that I most of the series was well within my bag of tricks and my wheelhouse. But chapter 4 really, really pushed me. There was a point where I was just like, I don't know that if I can do this.
Oh, wow.
And it really, really pushed me past it because it was so, it's a complex story that needs to wrap up clearly. You need to wrap everything up, but at the same time, not in a way that becomes boring and unlinear and stuff like that. So figuring out what to show, what to tell, how to, you know, what to lean into, what to compress, what to decompress, just until I found something that feels very rich and stuff, but retains the really clear linearity that the series has. That was real challenge, and I'm, if I may say so myself, no, you know what I mean. Like I think it's that was a big challenge that I was very apprehensive about, and I feel really good about the way it came out. So Volume 4, and it's funny because people are like, oh, Volume 3, they get away with the treasure, right? It's like, well, they've made it disappear, they're on their way out, but they're far from home.
Right.
And I can say that in Volume 4, the characters are going to get tested in a way that they've nowhere close yet in the series. I'm very, very passionate about it. That being said, what's really cool with the Kickstarter, so of course you have Volume 4, you get to catch up on your other volumes if you're missing some, but we're doing the slipcase. It's going to be insanely cool. If you come to the booth, you'll see there's a painting of Sledge, Rosalind, you know, sitting on the chair with like a bunch of dead vampires. It's all red. I mean you'll see, right. If you see it, you'll see it. It's really cool, and that's going to be on the cover, the slipcase. So you'll have your full collection of your four trades in there. It's going to be a really, really cool object. So you know, if you're already a fan and you just want to house your collection in the way that is really, really satisfying, you can do that. If you want to win Christmas with some insanely great gift for somebody, you can do that too. So I'm very excited about that. You know what's really fun is to let other artists in on your world, into your world, and let them kind of do their take on stuff. And so for the Kickstarter, I'm also doing a series of collabs with a bunch of guys, like Takashi Miyazawa did a really great drawing.
Wow.
I put in black and white in the first volume. It's Sledge and Finnegan, but I painted it, and Silver is in the black and white, but I love to do color too. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I get to like unleash that, and I go yes, you know. And so I'm really, really happy with that print. One was Rolf Gunnarsson, also, who's just an amazing artist, and then Mel Milton, who's just like a genius, is doing a one too. So that's going to be what Kickstarter backers can get that you can get in the ordinary. You know, I'm very, very excited about those. Again, because as much as they're, you know, like the series really like lives in my style and stuff like that, but it's so much fun to have other people, you know, whether it's readers or other artists, to just take ownership of it too. And right. It becomes, I feel like it's becoming part of the culture in a small degree, and I'm very, very excited about it.
Cool. I can't wait to read Volume 4.
Thank you.
The fact that you felt so challenged, then you figured it out, you made it work, you feel like it's some of your best work, that had to feel so rewarding for you. And knowing the way that you work and how much passion you have, I know that's going to come out in the story. And I expect the bar to be raised as you've done each volume. So any plans for Silver beyond the page? You know, you do have all those connections in animation.
We're working right now on making it happen as a live action movie.
Live action.
So, but I can't.
Right.
I mean, I've been warned to make non-announcement. So I'll just stay off the topic for that. But just so yes, there's an effort there.
Cool. That would be awesome. So, if any of our listeners, obviously, I'll put the link to the Kickstarter in the show notes. You can go check it out. Any other places on social media? Probably put Dark Planet.
Dark Planet So darkplanetcomics.com is a great way to go. Dark Planet has a Facebook page, which I have to say is not super active. But, I have a Facebook page. I have a Twitter account. Darkman has a Twitter account. Instagram. Also, I'm on Instagram. So I'm very easy to find on social media. I try to post as much as I can. It's been really hard. You know, it's very funny because like with Volume 3, for instance, or even before that, it was very easy to post images, you know, but Volume 4 is so condensed and spoilery,
right,
that it's very, so I'm like limited to posting the most cryptic images,
right,
and you know, because I can't give away
right
things that are...
Okay, listeners, well, all those links will be in the show notes, so go and check it out. Be sure you're following Dark Planet and Stefan's work. Be sure you get in on the Kickstarter so you can read Volume 4 just as soon as it's freshly into our greedy little fingers. I can't wait to read it myself. So
thank you,
Stefan. As always, great to see you. Thanks for joining
me. Great to see you. It's my pleasure. Yeah.
Best of luck on the Kickstarter. I can't wait to the next time we sit down. Will probably be after 4 is out,
right?
And the story's all wrapped up, well, and I'll read it together in one sitting.
Yeah,
and then it'll be a 2-hour because I'll be like, why is this and that? I can't wait. So great to see you. Thanks for joining me.
Great to see you, Jay.